Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the April 5 edition of Commodity Week. Will USDA's WASDE report stem the bearish tide next week? Well, we'll try to find out today on Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Joe Prasaki. He's the director of the Statistics Division at USDA NAS. Our panelists in studio today include Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Amy Sage from the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises of Mandeville, Louisiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find all of our agricultural programming online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's open today's discussion, Amy Sage, with this question. Given the lack of reaction in the cash market to the dollar drop in nearby corn futures, would you be willing to say USDA NAS was more right than wrong in its March 1 grain stocks estimate?
You know, I don't know that I can depict whether the USDA was more right than wrong because of that. I actually have been a little surprised to see basis soften since we've had the dollar drop in the nearby corn market. You know, we saw a lot of commercial grain get moved this fall with aflatoxin concerns, at least in this area. You know, we had half a crop. So while I don't think that everybody's completely empty, it sure doesn't feel like there's much out on the farm. Commercially, there still is corn left. But again, not as much as in a typical year. So I think at some point we do have to see basis do the work if we're not going to see it reflected in the corn market. And for the time being, there's just not a lot moving, and people are saying they're okay with their supplies today for April, May. So we'll see how that ends up turning out as we get closer to June, July, and see, you know, what actually can come to market when that time comes.
Sherman Newland.
Well, I'm like her. I'm not sure if we can say whether it's right or wrong. There are that these are the numbers we're going to have to live with and work with, however they came about. I know a lot of the bins around home are definitely empty, that's for sure. But I think, you know, we'll have to watch the basis. I think the basis will be the cash market will be the true tell of whether these numbers were eventually right or wrong.
And Dan Zwicker.
Well, given that we're halfway through the crop season or marketing season, you have to say that these are probably more right than wrong, realizing there's always statistical error in that. And when you're working tight balance sheets like we have been doing over the past several years, there's no doubt about it, this 400 million bushels number larger than what the average trade guessed was a shock to the trade.
Let's look forward to the WASDE number that will come out from the World Agricultural Outlook Board. And just to be clear, the USDA grain stocks figures and the prospective planting numbers come from USDA NAS. That's Joe Prasaki and company. We'll talk with him in the second half of this program. But the WASDE figures, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, come from a different agency, the World Agricultural Outlook Board. And they'll have to try to work those numbers back into the supply and demand estimates. The average trade guess now for the ending stocks for this current marketing season, Sherman, is 836 million bushels. Of course, that's well above the 632 in the previous WASDE figure. Will USDA WASDE change the number very much, you think?
I think it'll be a very important report next week, maybe more so than usual, to see if they actually do. If they do confirm those numbers and raise the ending stocks closer to what USDA thinks it is, then I think the market will take it to heart and probably sell off some more. If they don't, then we'll probably see some sort of reaction back to the upside. It may not be long-lived, but I think the report's going to be very important to see how it comes out.
Again, Amy, the USDA currently at $632 million, that before the grain stocks report was released. Average trade guess is $836. What do you think?
Well, I guess you would have to assume that they'll probably be in line with what's going on with the NAS numbers that we saw last Thursday. However, that hasn't always been the case, at least last year. You know, the two can be uncorrelated. You know, last year we saw a bullish number in the NAS report, and then we had a bearish number then on the April report, so they didn't really touch it come that time. So we'll see what ends up happening this time. But just because NAS came out with that doesn't necessarily mean, like you said, that we'll see a reflection this coming Wednesday.
Dan, during our Thursday afternoon discussion since January or so, you have warned and thought about the increased potential of a couple hundred million, maybe even more than that, coming into the marketplace. Of course, that showed up in part in the grain stocks. Is 836 on average high enough, or do we need a number that's bigger than that?
Well, who knows what NAS will do? I think, you know, if there's someone to criticize in this dollar decline that we've seen, was I think NAS's judgment that they increased feed usage on the March report, which I sent a wrong signal to the marketplace. And that is why we got such a negative reaction, I think, off of the stocks report, because NAS bumped up feed usage to 4.5 billion bushels. I think now, looking at the NAS number, they're going to have to back off that feed usage number probably down to 4250. So there's 250 million bushels drop in that, so that they'll have to probably put that into carry out. So actually, I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see carry out closer to 900 than 800, but we'll see what they do on that.
Okay, so just to be clear, the report from WASDE, which you're talking about, comes out from World Agriculture Outlook Board. That's the WASDE figures. And NAS and Joe Prasaki and company do a couple of other things. But you are up around 900 potentially for this WASDE report. You think in May, or will it come later?
I just think we have to have an ending stocks closer to monthly usage. Now, this year, monthly usage is less than the billion one that we've been working over the past several years. So probably 900 million is probably about where it's going to end up at, I think, at the end of the day. And I think from what you can see from the grain stocks report, we're going to get there. Maybe WASDE doesn't bump it up there all the way, but when you look at the implied feed disappearance for the first 6 months of the year, feed disappearance is somewhere around 4.250. USA currently has it at 4.5. So there's 250 million bushels that they can shave off of the feed usage number, and then that's going to have to go someplace. Either that's going to go into ending stocks, and that'd be my guess. So then you add your 250 to your 630 four that they had here last month, and that gets you up to that 875 or pretty close to the 900 mark.
Amy, turn your attention to the end user very quickly. How far along are they in their purchases? So have they got stocks bought already for April, May, parts of June? Where do you think they are?
From what I've been hearing, it sounds like people are saying they're pretty well covered through April, May. Now, when we get into June, July, I think there's a lot more question mark out there. But I guess people that do have stocks left are probably holding out for those June, July months anyway, speculating that they will get a higher number for those from the basis side.
Yeah. So there's what I'm trying to get at, and at least in old crop prices, there are folks that have corn stocks left. And that tells you one thing, because there are people who actually have corn left.
Few and far between, yeah.
But apparently we have maybe not as far between as we thought, if USDA is right. So the question is, are they better off to hold, or should they go ahead and finish up the gambling stocks and not worry about it?
you know, you're going to get a different answer from different folks about that. I guess, in my opinion, you know, unless we shock the market again this coming Wednesday, we've got to wait until the end of June to really see an impact on the future side of this. So all things considered, if, let's say we level off here in the old crop corn on the board, then I do think that we're tight on corn come June, July. So I guess if it's migraine, I'm probably holding out at that point to see if I can get that bigger number later in the summer.
If I'm holding grain and the report next week is not anywhere near friendly, I think we better be selling it or buying put options if you have more than gambling stocks left, because if they coincide with the USDA numbers, I feel like, you know, old crop corn is not going to be above $6 for very much longer.
All right. Then turn that around and talk to me about Sherman. Mm-hmm. New crop. Of course, we have our numbers in for crop insurance. That's done. You've got part of the crop covered. Maybe if you've been listening, you have 10 to 30% or maybe the rest of the crop covered in some way, but maybe not. What do you do at this point?
Well, I'd like to see some sort of little bit of a bounce maybe going into next week, but I think you got to get more coverage, even if you got crop insurance on, because we have a very good potential with the acreage and a good yield, possibly, that you'll see corn in the mid $4, if not lower. So we've been buying puts for our guys. We're, you know, still recommending buying put options. And if we could see a bump up in the futures price, we'd probably push some cash sales a little bit heavier.
Here's some of the numbers as they finished up this week in Chicago from the corn pit. May futures settled at $6.29. That was down 66 and a quarter from the previous close on Thursday afternoon of last week. By the way, after the USDA report trade, the drop has been 97 and a quarter since from last Thursday until this Friday, in total, that is. And December futures over that same time frame were down 30 and a quarter cents. But they finished this week just 3.5 cents lower. From the bean pit, $14.08 was the top of the May. The low there at $13.54.5. Their settlement price was off 43 cents on the week, off 78.75 since the USDA released its numbers at $13.61.75. November beans at $12.28 were down 23.5 cents this week, a total of 35.75 cents since the USDA report. Dan, in all of those numbers, when you look at the charts, which one has the most interesting / depressing set of technicals?
Soybeans are probably more bearish than corn is. I think, especially when you take a look at the weekly lead futures soybean chart, there is a picture perfect head and shoulder top formation on it, and the reaction since the report has had a clear breakout underneath the neckline. Depending upon which technician you talk to and depending upon how they measure downside price objectives based upon head and shoulders, you're talking about something underneath 10 for the long term. Now, that's not going to happen next week or maybe the following week, but both corn and soybeans in the new crop months are following a counter-seasonal trend. And what I mean by that, they are going absolutely opposite of what a 30-year price average reflects, both in December corn and November beans. And it's very similar to kind of what we followed in 10, where we went counter-seasonal, a decline into a June low, very much like what we did last year. We declined into a June low, and both those years we had weather problems then begin to take hold in July and August, and the market then rallied into the late summer, fall months. So whether or not we're in the prospects of doing one of those again, we'll have to kind of take a wait-and-see attitude on that. But they are both in a counter-seasonal trend. The way I look at it, there's about three things that can maybe change this thing around. Is number one is China. Number two is some adverse planting conditions here over the next 60 days. And or we get into the June report and we find out that maybe stocks ain't quite as large as what we think. But there's been a lot of farmer selling since the report, and that's one of the reasons why that basis has weakened. There is more corn out there than what the trade thought. It just took the USDA report to jerk everybody's chain to have it come on out into the marketplace.
Sherman, a couple of other items that have been in the marketplace this week, and maybe you can just pick one of them. Didn't hear a lot about soybean exports out of South America. Wonder a little bit about that. Of course, we have bird flu out of China. That's been something impacting the marketplace. And rain is expected to fall in our part of the world next week.
Yeah, we haven't heard a lot out of the exports but out of South America, but that's expected to increase as time goes by. And the bird flu, I think that caught the headlines, and then that sent the beans a little bit lower here in this week. I think if that gets to be any worse, you could see beans off a little bit more. And, you know, in the news also has been the North Korean situation that's got everybody, you know, kind of worked up. So we'll see how that plays out, too.
Sherman Newland is with Risk Management Commodities. He's out of Hudsonville, Illinois. Amy Sage is here from the Andersons in Champaign County, and Dan Zwicker on the phone line from CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. When we come back in just a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Joe Persaki from USDA NASS. He's in Washington, D.C.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. It was a cold and dry week in Illinois. Temperatures were 6 degrees below average with very little rainfall around the state. The Water Survey maintains a network of 19 sites around the state with 4 and 8 inch soil temperatures. Currently, soil temperatures at the 4 inch level under grass are still cold and range from 35 degrees in Freeport to 45 degrees in Carbondale. You can find those data by using your favorite search engine and the phrase Illinois soil temperatures. Who is ready for spring? According to the National Weather Service, it will be nice on Saturday with highs in the 60s across Illinois. Lows Saturday night will range from the upper 30s in the north to the low 50s in the south. Sunday will be pleasant with highs in the 50s to the north and in the 60s to the south. But then things will get interesting. A cold front will stall out over Illinois on Sunday evening and on through Wednesday. As a result, there is a chance of rain every day with 7-day totals ranging from 1 inch in northern Illinois to 2 or more inches in southern Illinois. Temperatures should be moderate with highs in the 50s and 60s and lows just above freezing. The new April outlook was released this week. They removed the chance of above average temperatures and precipitation across Illinois. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the April 5 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities, Amy Sage of the Andersons, and Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprise on the phone line. And in Washington, D.C., on our other line from USDA NASS, is the director of the Statistics Division, and that would be Joe Persaki. Joe, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. Hey, my first question for you is, when you saw the grain stocks number that morning, just before it was released to the press and the rest of us, what was the first word that went through your mind?
Yeah, when we were looking at those grain stocks numbers and put it all together, and then basically once we finish up everything, then we look at what the, you know, quote, the trade is thinking, I said, boy, this is going to be an interesting day. That's what I said to myself.
Interesting was the first word, really?
Yeah. Okay, maybe it was the second word.
That's what I thought. Okay, you got the number. Reaction inside D.C. was like what in the room?
I just think, you know, you have to remember from our perspective, you know, and I think you and I have talked about this, Todd. It's like, okay, this is what the survey said. Okay, everybody, did you guys all go through the data and check it out? And they said, yep. I said, okay, it is what it is, and we're probably going to get some phone calls today. I mean, that's really, you know, really how we approach it. Now, you know, now there may have been some other groups, you know, like you guys were talking about the World Board and, you know, and the Chief Economist Office and those sort of things. But, you know, from our perspective, it was just, okay, are we sure everything is right? Everybody assured me, and we move forward.
So, Joe, what percent of farmers are surveyed, and are you surveying commercial elevators? And how do you derive that number when you look at those survey numbers?
Right, right. There's two pieces to it. One is the off-farm piece, and which is basically a census of all known you know, entities that store grain, ranging from ethanol plants to mills to elevators, and on the soybean side, it would be, you know, your, you know, oil crushers, and that's everybody. Everybody's in there. We get a response rate of probably between 85 and 90% on that one. And then for the on-farm piece, we have a sample. It was about 80,000 farmers across the United States. Now, I don't have it by state, but like when I was in Iowa, our sample was about 3,000 or so. Illinois is pretty close to the same. You know, and those are individuals that, you know, have all kinds of different crops. And you know, and also grain storage capacity on their operations.
Joe, do you go back after looking at something like that, and then, you know, maybe look at the January numbers and try and say, well, where did the big difference come from? Because when you put out a bigger number of such magnitude, I mean, it really impacts how farmers have to try and make a decision, and you know, they kind of start really losing their faith in what's going on with these numbers.
Right. You know, and the thing is, yeah, because all, you know, like what, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week, you know, I had the guys go back and look, you know, mainly on the off-farm side, because that's where we have, you know, matched records, you know, on the off-farm, you know, between, you know, last time in December and now, looking for any sort of anomaly, you know, does it make sense? And we didn't see it. You know, the thing that struck me, you know, with you guys, your comments earlier, you folks' comments, you're talking about the farmers, you know, not, you know, there's probably less grain. And we did see that because this was the first time ever in the March survey that the off-farm piece of the grain stocks on corn was bigger than the on-farm. Because usually we don't see that until we get to the June survey. So, but we do go back and look, but the thing was, this time it was quite a bit different on the off-farm stocks than on-farm, you know, comparable. Because normally, just give you kind of some ideas, normally, about the 10-year average of the percent of the stocks held off-farm is about 43%, and this time it was 51%. So there was substantially more held off-farm than on-farm this time.
That sounds like it's a nice way of saying December 1st, corn farmers in their bins didn't really have a good handle of what was there, and once it got moved into the commercials' hands, the bushels got counted differently.
And there's been other individuals that have suggested that, you know, and one thing, you know, I talked about, well, this crop was harvested so early. I mean, farmers got a good handle on, you know, what they had and where they had it. Now, I mean, you know, the experts there, you know, you guys can comment on this. You know, the question is, you know, around that December 1 number, how much grain was moving? You know what I'm saying? Because we do not count grain in transit. So around December 1, was there an abnormally large amount of corn being, you know, in transit? Or, you know, was the river, was the grain backed up on the river? Because, you know, around Thebes, you know, the river was so low there.
I guess that's the question that I would, was my initial reaction is that when you looked at the number that was issued there last Thursday, and then when you compare it to the December 1 number, you could say that, you know, somewhere there on December that the survey missed, or, you know, missed 200 million bushels or 300 million bushels or whatever that is. And I guess my question is there a good reason or where do you think it went?
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, you know, I really don't have, I personally don't have any, you know, good feeling where it was. I mean, the procedures we did in December were no different than we have done in the past. You know, we still do the complete census of the off-farm entities, the mills, elevators, commercials, that sort of thing, and then it's a sample of about 80,000 or so farmers across the U.S. So, I mean, procedure-wise, it was the same. It's just the question was where was the corn? Was it not necessarily in storage? And I don't have an answer on that.
Well, by December 1st, we were pretty well all done. A lot of farmers in the areas that had aflatoxin basically just moved the grain right off the combine into the elevator system. So by December 1, things were fairly quiet,
So, that's the question, that we've been asking. Again, we've combed through the data again this week, and we feel pretty good at where things are, It didn't necessarily make a whole lot of friends out there, but, that's kind of where we are right now.
So there's been a lot of talk amongst the people in our industry of that the production number was probably off from the get-go, and that might be where things have become a discrepancy, and perhaps that could be because we've started harvest in August now, especially in southern states and even some in southern Illinois here, and that could be throwing the number. But it sounds like really where we were off was from that December time frame. Is that correct then, or is that still a possibility that we could have been off in production?
Well, on production, that question has been posed to us a couple, multiple times, since last Thursday. And the thing is, when I talk to, just talk to farmers, they wonder where we found all that corn. So it's a tale of two stories because, when we start doing our county estimates and there are farmers looking at some of their area, the area plan insurance, that when our county yields came in, where they were, they couldn't believe that they were as high as they were. So, it's really an interesting situation, but we feel pretty good where things are right now. And like you guys were saying, let's look forward going into June.
Joe, do you see any way of trying to improve on how you gather this information, make it a little bit more accurate? Because this fall, like Dan said, most of the farmers here in the Midwest took their corn to the elevator for insurance purposes, so it was a pretty much known entity then.
Right. Well, the thing is, on the off, the off-farm side, we contact every one of them. It's not a sample. It's every single one. There's about 9,200 entities, across the U.S. that, are off-farm places that we consider off-farm places. And we contact about, it's a little under 9,000, it's like 8,900. Why? Because there are some, some companies, they say, well, just contact us once. You don't need to contact all our individual places. That side's pretty, pretty solid, I feel. And then, we could always have improvement on the farmer side, and that's where hopefully, folks like you and when I'm out and I have the chance, to suggest to farmers that, hey, even though it's a voluntary survey, take the time to fill it out, because it's not like USDA is trying to, figure out exactly what, their operation is doing. We're trying to, provide information for the whole system on it, and that's probably the best thing we could do.
Joe, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. Have a good weekend.
Sure. Thanks, Todd.
Joe Persaki is the director of the Statistics Division at USDA NASS. Time for a final word from our panelists. Dan Zwicker, we'll start with you on the phone line, please.
Just be safe as you start going to the field. It does look like you probably got rain for a week or so, but be safe when you're out planting. You still got plenty of time to plant that crop.
Yeah, while you're out there planting, don't forget about getting some marketing done, and don't sit down and don't do anything. So get a plan and stick with it, please.
That's right. Just be safe this spring. And again, new crop coverage. If you're uncovered at this point, may want to start thinking about getting some protection.
Our thanks to Amy Sage, who you just heard from the Anderson, Sherm Newland of Risk Management Commodities. He's out of Hudsonville, Indiana. And Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises from Mandeville, Louisiana. That wraps up this April 5th edition of Commodity Week. You can find it online if you'd like at willag.org and listen to it all again if you want. That's willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.